All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Free For All. I'm your host, Big John, and I want to bid you all welcome to this live stream edition of Free For All. You know, these things are becoming somewhat regular now on Thursday nights. I'm hoping that we'll get a little more popular and have all you libertarian and libertarian curious people joining in for conversation. We often try to have guests. Tonight I'm flying solo because a lot of the major libertarian players are traveling to Washington, D.C. for the convention, which, if you could tell from the promos for this episode, I'm not too fond of, and we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. But while we're at it, let me just put on the scroll, and that'll let you know that we are on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook Live, and X, formerly known as Twitter. If you're catching us on one of those platforms, please feel free to share your questions or comments with me tonight. They'll be popping onto my console here. The only one that does not allow for comments to come through to me would be on X. If you're on Twitter, X, you can watch the show just fine. But you won't be. I won't be able to see your comments directly. So if you want to comment, if you have a question, go over to our YouTube, Rumble, or Facebook Live pages, and then you could comment away to your heart's delight. Okay, so the timing of this, it is 8:02 p.m. in New York right now, which means that the official poll to determine which five libertarian candidates make it to the debate stage during the convention is now officially closed. So for those that are unaware, the new Libertarian Party led by the Mises Caucus, everything is pay for play. There is no such thing as popular candidates or candidates that are somehow stirring up the people. You know, which is ironic, given a party that supposedly the overwhelming majority of its members were inspired by Ron Paul, who led a truly populist movement to introduce libertarianism to a lot of the younger folk, to a lot of the kids that now run the Mises Caucus. They don't particularly care for unplanned things. So very simply, the way that these libertarian presidential candidates who have been campaigning their hearts out for the most part for a while now, and a very good crop of candidates, in my opinion, we'll talk about them in a little while, they don't get to the debate stage unless people donate to the party in their name. The top five by total dollar amount are supposed to make it to the debate stage. So let's take a quick look at that live. As a matter of fact, since we are live streaming, let me just, looks like the page on the Libertarian Convention site just went dead as soon as I went to refresh. Okay, but I'll tell you what I was seeing up until 7:59. So I think I had it right as to who'll make the debate stage, but I could be off if someone made, if someone managed to garner a whole bunch of contributions right at the 8 p.m. Eastern Time deadline. So what it comes down to is this. The top five candidates were, now I may have the order of the total amount, but these were the five. Lars Mapstead, Chase Oliver, Mike Termott, Dr. Charles Belay, and Mike Rechtenwald. Those were the five that had the top dollar amounts as of 7:59 p.m. As I said, this is live. You can't, so you got to expect the unexpected, right? I'm on the presidential debate contest site right now. When I refreshed it just now to let you know the results of the straw poll, it just said page not available. So up until 7:59 or so, it showed you who was in the lead. And like I said, it was those five candidates: Mapstead, Chase Oliver, Belay, Rechtenwald, and Termott. Now, those are pretty much some of the candidates that I've pretty much grown accustomed to. Those are the ones that I thought were going to make the debate stage. Now, of course, let's draw a distinction. Just because those are the five that raise the most money that are getting onto the debate stage, that doesn't necessarily mean that those will be the ones that are in the running to get the nomination. That doesn't in any way, one would hope, necessarily reflect who the delegates prefer. And of course, the preferred candidate of the Mises Caucus, the sort of like Kremlitarians that are running this event, their preferred candidate is Mike Rechtenwald, Dr. Mike Rechtenwald, who I've had the pleasure of interviewing. I mean, when I interviewed him, he seemed perfectly fine, you know, like in terms of answering questions. He was forthright with his past and certainly was a polite and cordial in, conversation that I had with him. He's not necessarily my choice for a Libertarian candidate. And people have asked me, like, who do I not endorse is the wrong word, because I am positive that nobody cares who I endorse. Okay. I'm not so vain as to think that my endorsement carries any weight with anyone out there. And quite honestly, nor should it. But if you're just interested in who I think would make for a good candidate, honestly, the three that I've narrowed it down to, and I'd say I'd be very happy with any of these three, would be Chase Oliver, Lars Mapstead, and Mike Termott. Not necessarily even in that order. But if any one of those three were to come out of this, the LP presidential nominee, I could say very confidently we have a professional-looking candidate, someone that knows how to go out and campaign, who cuts a good image, that isn't retweeting ridiculous memes, that isn't courting alt-right Christian nationalists, right? That's not any of those guys, right? So I'd be very happy with those guys. Now, as you could tell from the way I just phrased that, I'm not too fond of what's been happening with the Libertarian Party. Now, let me preface all this by saying, I've said this to somebody who is becoming going from acquaintance to possibly friend here in New York for me, Larry Sharp. I've talked to him about this a lot of times. And Larry is a guy, for the most part, nary a bad word about anybody. If you're a Libertarian of any stripe, you're Larry's buddy. If you're a Libertarian of any stripe, if you're interested in spreading the message of liberty, of individual freedom, Larry's an ally of yours, okay? But when I look at this, I see a disturbing trend. And again, I'm not an inside politics guy. If you ask me, like, hey, what's happening behind the scenes? Like, what's going on with the National Committee Discord server? What's this all I hear about these sort of Machiavellian games taking place, you know, hostile takeovers and all that? I don't know anything about that. And the only thing I know is just the information that kind of seeps in on a daily basis. I don't have any inside track to anything. When I started in these shows, I was interested in libertarianism as a philosophy. I was interested in talking about my philosophical makeup. And I was very clear to say, I don't know if I'm a classical liberal, a minarchist, or paleo-libertarian, whatever you want to call me. I just know what my beliefs are. I believe in maximum individual liberty. I believe in the non-aggression principle. I believe in free markets. I believe in free speech. I'm a free speech absolutist. And I don't believe in basically telling other people how to live their lives. That's really what I am. Now, to me, that seemed to align with the Libertarian Party. That seemed to align with, even though he wasn't at the time in the Libertarian Party, Justin Amash. It seems to align with Milton Friedman. Like, I'm not a Ron Paul guy, not because I have anything against Ron Paul, mind you, but I became aware of these philosophies, these thought processes before Ron Paul. So to me, the most influential libertarian figure for me was Milton Friedman, who did not align himself with the capital L libertarian movement, right? He was a small L libertarian who said, I vote big R Republican. Right. What was that line? I'm a small L libertarian, big R Republican. So that sort of explained his philosophy and then where he had to sit politically in his day, which was the late, you know, like from the, say, from the 50s on, right? So that's what influenced me into becoming aware of libertarianism. And so to me, Ron Paul is not the god that he is to a lot of these other younger generation libertarians. And, you know, it's funny because I'm almost 60 right now. So when I say younger libertarians, it's basically anybody under 60, right? So don't take it to mean that I mean teenagers necessarily. But so to me, Ron Paul is not the Lord God of libertarianism that he is to everybody else. I've never been an objectivist, so I'm not necessarily a Randian guy either, although I think she was right about a lot of economic theory and things like that. So like I said, I'm a Milton Friedman guy. Now, that'll immediately get me scorn from like the Mises kids, right? Because, you know, that's not hardcore enough for them. I'd like to think I'm a minarchist, which means I do believe that there should be some government. I don't believe in an overbearing government, but I do believe in some government. I do believe in government that enforces laws. I do believe in government that provides for the national defense. Okay. But for the most part, when you when I talked initially, when I started off on this venture, interviewing a lot of people, some of the people that I initially interviewed were not what you would call minarchists, not what you would call classical liberals necessarily. So when I interview guys like Spike Cohen or Jacob Hornberger, and I talk to them, I'd say, you know what? I'm there with them 90% of the way. There might be 5 to 10% that we disagree on, or we may disagree on methodology, but for the most part, I could see where we're aligned. I got to tell you, this Mises crowd, and again, I'm painting with a broad brush stroke, right? Because not everybody in the Mises caucus falls into what I'm saying, but unfortunately, the Mises caucus, just like the left wing of the Democratic Party, just like the MAGA side of the Republican Party, we're all being defined by our fringes, right? So, you know, the Democratic Party is being defined by the ultra progressives, the AOCs, the Omars, the Talibs, right? The Hakeem Jeffries, right? They're defined by that. The Republican Party, for better or worse, now is defined by all the Trumpians, all the ultra MAGAites, right? And I don't want to get into a debate, good, bad, or indifferent right now, but I'm saying that's what defines the party in the everyday consciousness of the average political voter, right? The Democrats are the ultra-progressive left, borderline socialist communists, or outright communists and socialists. The right is defined by the MAGA Republicans now, right? There's no Nelson Rockefellers in the Republican Party anymore. They're all Trump acolytes for the most part. And the Libertarian Party now seems to be defined by these Mises kids that have taken over the LP since the Reno reset. And I've always found that disturbing because they don't align with my libertarianism. Better or worse, they just don't align anymore. And there's a lot that I could say about it, and we'll talk about it in terms of why I feel that way. But the truth of the matter is this convention sort of brought to a boil everything that I think is wrong about the Mises caucus and their leadership. So we'll get into that in a second. Let's check the comments a little bit right now. Jeff Schwartz from 4TO Council. Okay, Jeff, hi. He says hi. Hi, Jeff. How you doing? Glad to have you on board. Hopefully you won't turn into a hater. Maybe you will. I don't know. But thanks for joining in right now. I appreciate you doing that. We also have the Swampcast Network, and they say, what's up? What's up? I'm old enough to remember that Bud commercial. What's up? Okay. Swampcast Network, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time to see what we're all about. Lisa Del Pilar, who is out that you think deserve to get in? That's a good question. Who if the top five holds the way it has, I can't say that any one of my preferred candidates did not get in, because that would mean that of the major candidates that we know about that didn't get in, that would be Joshua Smith, Toad. Yeah, you heard that correctly. There's a candidate named Toad. And there were two other minor candidates that were on the ballot in the straw poll. And I apologize to them right now because I can't recall their names. So I don't think that there was anybody who didn't get in that I would have preferred getting in. So the answer to your question is everyone I would be happy with getting in if the top five stayed the way I described, which was Mapstead, Termott, Oliver, Belay, and Rechtenwald. That's fine with me. And as I said, Rechtenwald is the endorsed candidate of the Mises Caucus. Now, I'm not going to disqualify him based on that endorsement necessarily, but I will say of the five that I just mentioned getting onto the debate stage, Rec would probably be fourth on my list. Okay. The top three, I said, I have no problem with any of Oliver, Mapstead, and Termott. Okay. And for different reasons, mind you. Termott, I know a lot of these Mises kids call him a fed and a cop, you know, all this derogatory nonsense. And maybe you chalk that up just to politics. But I like Mike Termott. I'll tell you why, because when I interviewed him, we had a nice long interview. The man has a humanity to him. He has experience. When he talks about policing in areas and how what he saw that the police do wrong that could be done better. And by the way, he became a cop at a late age. Okay. He wasn't a cop like out of high school or out of college or came out of the army or the armed services to be a cop. When you have that sort of like gung-ho mentality, he became a cop in his 40s, where he then had the maturity of someone. Now he worked for the Fed. He was an economist in New York. And some people say disqualify him for that. But to me, if he's coming to you saying, I went through this, I see it. I was always like libertarian in the sense that I believed in restricted government and everything. Then I went inside of it. I saw how it worked and here's how I come out, right? You can't always necessarily look at someone's past and disqualify them if they've shown maturity, if they showed evolution. Thomas Sowell started out as a communist. Okay. And now you wouldn't call him a communist and you certainly wouldn't disqualify his thoughts, say, on the free market. So, Termott to me is someone that I could easily see myself voting for. The same goes for Chase Oliver. Guy is an accomplished candidate. He's been through the ringer when it comes to politics. So he knows how to run a campaign. He's got a great support staff. He's visited all 50 states. He is a traditional political candidate. Now, to some people, that would be like, well, he's a regime libertarian. That's nonsense, too. Okay, there's a reason why things are done the same way for the most part. It's because they've worked. And, you know, you don't need to be one of these teenagers that only wants the new cool thing and needs to upend the apple cart at every turn, right? Like Chase Oliver, professional candidate. He appeals to a lot of different demographics. So Chase Oliver, I could see myself voting for. I could also definitely see myself voting for Lars, self-made billionaire. Is someone who has a plan. If you watched this show, I think it was episode 19, if you look back at our archives. And actually, why don't I do that? While this is going on, let me pop up the banner so you could see. That's where you go to watch some of the past episodes, right? So go there, and I think it was episode 19 where it was Lars Mapstead and Larry Sharp, my buddy Larry Sharp. I had them on this broadcast the day before they announced they were teaming up, where Lars and Larry announced that, you know, if Lars gets the POTUS nomination for the Libertarian Party, Larry Sharp is going to run as his VP or try to run as a VP to run with Lars. I could see myself voting for Lars. Very practical man, a businessman, knows how to get from A to Z. He has a plan, his Stop 270 plan. I'm not going to say it'll work for sure, but I'm telling you, at least it's a thought out plan. So if you're looking for outside the box thinking that is rooted in reality, that, hey, this is how we can get some credible publicity, some good publicity, how we can possibly affect a 269-269 EC tie, Lars is your man for that. And that's what you have. You look at that. Any one of those three. Rechtenwald, I think, has a certain credibility to him. Again, if you're part of the anarchist crew, which I am not, but I give him that he's legitimate to that faction. I put him at number four. Dr. Belay, I love Dr. Belay. I think he's a great human being. And again, I ignore the nonsense that was thrown his way leading up to this straw poll to see who gets on stage, calling him a COVID apologist and a vax. Listen, man, first of all, I don't buy into a lot of that nonsense. Okay. I've always said the vaccines were a personal choice. I am anti-mandate, but I am not going to tell someone that they're murderers because they're a doctor who acted at the time on what they thought was the best solution. Okay. So without getting into too deep, I don't view him as a murderer. I don't view him as someone who pushed murder on anybody. That's nonsense in my opinion. Okay. But the reason I put Dr. Belay fifth is because I think he would feel more at home in a conservative Republican district. I think he would feel more at home as a conservative Republican, like say, or a libertarian Republican, like a Thomas Massie. I think he fits in more there rather than like a full out libertarian, but he's evolving. He got into it late this year. I give him a lot of credit. He shows a lot of energy and a lot of zeal. So maybe it turns out being that Dr. Belay is one of these, hey, converts make the best true believers because they're converts. They got into it for a reason. They were convinced to get into it. But right now I'd put him at five. Maybe it's just a matter of him putting in some dues. So Lisa, thank you for your question. That was a good question. Let's see, what other comments do we have? Swampcast, who's number one for you? Oh, man. Swamp, I got to tell you, part of the issue here for me is going to be who comes out, who's their vice president. Like, and I know the Libertarian Party gets the vice president and the vice presidential nominees independently. We saw that with Joe Jorgensen, obviously, and Spike. I don't think either one was the other's first choice for that position, but they learned to work together, right? So I want to see Larry Sharp run as the VP. I think he's earned it. I think he deserves it. And I think he's an effective messenger. I'm a big Larry Sharp fan, fellow New Yorker, fellow Queens resident up until recently. So Larry, to me, I would love to see him as a VP. Larry has stated that the only way he'll accept a VP nomination if he were to win is if he were Lars's running mate, that if Lars was not the presidential nominee, he would withdraw. And I think he said that on his Sharp Way show last night. So maybe if anything, that leans me towards Lars Swamp, that it's less about Lars, who I love, as I stated, but it'd be more to see Larry get the VP nod. I don't want to see Clint Russell become VP. Nothing against him personally. I don't know him personally. I don't know his character, so I'm not making any claims to his character. I don't want to impugn him in any way. I just go by his public statements. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't think the Earth is flat. I don't think the moon landings were faked. So I'd rather see Larry Sharp be the VP candidate. So maybe to answer your question, Swamp, maybe Lars. Let's see what's going on here. Swampcast, interested to hear your take on the MC stuff. We'll be streaming the whole thing. Definitely need to connect. Yeah, so everyone here, Swampcast, I guess from that comment means that the Swampcast Network will be at the convention live streaming. Guys, fortunately, I will not be there. Grumblings Media, unfortunately, couldn't make it out to the convention this weekend due to scheduling conflicts. But the Mises Caucus, since you asked. And by the way, Swamp, if you need me to call in, I'll be happy to. But always a time to pimp yourself. You know that, guys, right? But the truth of the matter is, I am not a fan of the Mises Caucus. And this whole season, outside of my Twitter feed, where occasionally I will troll them a little bit. Not that I'm a professional troller. But here's the thing. When you're running a political party, I think it's best that that political party not be run by teenagers. Okay? Now, some of you might take me quite literally and say, like, is there anybody under the age of 20 in the MC running the thing? No. But much like I address Trump as being a five-year-old due to his temperament, I view the Mises Caucus leadership as being teenagers. I'm not calling anyone out by name because that would be unfair. They're not here to defend themselves. I am also just reacting to the impression they give off. So other than to their acolytes, they come off like a bunch of teenagers. Okay, now you could call us regime libertarians, you could call us old farts, you could call us people with one foot on in the grave and the other one on a banana peel. Use whatever terminology you want. There's a reason why, up until this convention, you never saw Republicans say, hey, let's invite the Libertarian nominee, presumptive Libertarian nominee, to our convention. You've never seen the Democrats do that. They don't invite the Greens. They don't invite people that they, you know, you understand what I'm saying? Like, so I've heard the arguments, pro and con, some of them from people that I respect within the Libertarian Party. They're like, oh, John, publicity is good. Any publicity is good. Do you know how much national attention we're going to get with Trump being there, with RFK being there? But to me, if you get that attention for the wrong reasons, it's a Pyrrhic victory. You don't draw people to libertarianism by showcasing how much you're similar to Trump or how similar you are to RFK. Now, I've heard it all. Oh, it'll give us a chance to show the differences, to highlight the differences. We'll show how Vivek Ramaswamy is not a libertarian and all this nonsense. Why do it on your dime? Why do it at the cost of LP resources? Why do it at the cost of LP reputation? Okay? So I'm trying to understand what the upside was to this. They didn't stage an independent situation, say an event, where it's like, hey, we're sponsoring our own debate. Here's our candidate. We challenge any of the other status candidates to show up and take our candidates on. That's not the case. We invite Trump. He has his conditions. He's not going to debate. He's only going to talk, blah, 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 blah. All of a sudden, everybody comes out of the woodwork. Dave Smith, who for perhaps very, not perhaps, for very valid reasons, and by valid, I mean he has his own reasons. He chose not to run. He chose not to be part of this cycle. Great. Why is he offering to debate anybody at the convention? Shouldn't that slot go to our nominee? Shouldn't the focus and the spotlight be on our nominees? I don't understand this. This is befuddling to me. And when I hear someone who is supportive of the Mises Caucus tell me like, oh, no, you're an old fart. You don't understand. All publicity is good publicity. No, it's not. I've looked at the Google searches. I've looked at the Google trends. It's Trump at Libertarian Convention. RFK at Libertarian Convention. By the way, I looked up until yesterday when I looked through these searches, not one of the results mentioned any of our candidates. Not a single one. It was always just like, oh, Trump is trying to ingratiate himself to the libertarians. Oh, RFK aligns with libertarians on the anti-vax issue. As if that's the only reason to be a libertarian. And by the way, only half the anti-vax, because RFK still thinks that vaccines cause autism. Okay? So I don't understand why we had to invite them to this thing. Then, to the extent that talk about the MC stuff, I think the Swampcast Network said that. I'm sorry, I didn't get to finish that off. But yeah, I don't think the Mises Caucus is doing a very good job. I think they've shown themselves to be immature. I like even if I even if I give them the benefit of every doubt ideologically, I cannot say that they've done this in any professional way. Like, for a caucus that came in screaming about the sellout by giving Bill Weld a spot, which, by the way, I agree with. Bill Weld should have never been Gary Johnson's running mate. Should have been Larry Sharp. It should have been Gary and Larry that year, okay? But Weld came in. He promised a whole bunch of money to be brought into the coffers. He got the VP slot. Fantastic. I did not agree with it at all back then either. But for a caucus that swept into power, allegedly spurred on by that seminal decision to put Weld in there, all of a sudden, like, we're having Trump? The hell is libertarian about Trump? But I'll tell you what is good about Trump if you're an MC person, is, man, Trump is very, very appealing to Christian white nationalists. Just saying that. I don't know who's a Christian white nationalist in the MC, but they seem very tolerant of them. And I'm being very kind right now. They seem very tolerant of Christian white nationalists. A lot of them do. They might dress it up as free speech, but free speech does not mean that you give equal weight and equal validity to nonsense. So to that extent, I'm not too thrilled with them. I'm not too impressed with what the MC is doing. Then you start, you know, as I get into this a little bit more and you start seeing some communications going back and forth, I don't want to reveal people that I've talked to because they've asked me not to identify them, but people in the MC, in the back room, smoky room, back room politics type of thing. And they've made me aware of some things. And a lot of, and look, politics is a dirty business, which is why I hate it and why I'll never get into it formally. I'm more than happy to sit on a stupid podcast like this and just talk about it a little bit, get some crap off my chest. But I'm never going to run for office. I have no intention, no desire to run for office. When I walked into my local chapter one day here just to meet at a meetup, just to shake Larry Sharp's hand initially, they were like, hey, do you want to be our media liaison? Do you want to do communicate? No, thank you. No, don't want any of that. Don't want anything to do with that. So yeah, that's the MC to me has been a colossal failure. And whether it's a big enough failure to take down the Libertarian Party permanently, that remains to be seen. Because I think that's a very valid concern right now. Membership is down. Fundraising is down. Respect for the party is down, except among MC followers. So to me, I think it's been a colossal failure. Dave, libertarian populism is the key to winning. Dave, you have me at a little bit of a conundrum. And then your follow-up comment was Trump speaking there brings libertarians out of obscurity. Dave, I don't necessarily disagree with you. It's just that it depends on what you hope libertarianism is here to come out of the obscurity with, right? Are we coming out of the obscurity to be MAGA light? Are we coming out of the obscurity to be the home of alt-right minions that otherwise would embarrass the Republican Party? Let me give you an example. David Duke, for those of you old enough to remember David Duke, the Klan's, the head of the Klan, I think he ran for several local offices. And please don't get me wrong, because it's from memory and I'm an old man. I think it was in Louisiana, late 80s, I think, early 90s, maybe. He went from, at one point he ran as a Democrat, at one point he ran as a Republican, but he always ran as a racist. And here's the problem, here's the issue with that, right? Like, one could say, like, well, whatever party he was with, he was getting publicity. More papers wrote about David Duke. TV shows came to talk about and to report on David Duke running for office. Isn't that great? Isn't that positive publicity? No, it was bad publicity. Whichever party he associated with himself, and honestly, there was conspiracy theories back then that, for example, he'd run as a Democrat because the Republicans knew that a Klansman running as a Democrat would bring down the Democratic Party locally, right? And vice versa, the same thing. So you don't want just publicity, Dave. You want publicity that at the very least reflects your beliefs and your party accurately. Like, I mean, honestly, here's what I'm talking about, right? Let me see if I can find this. I want to share it. And by the way, this, I don't want this to become a dunk on Trump sort of show, because that's not my my point here. But let me just show you guys something. Now, I'm going to bring this full screen so you can see it temporarily. And what you see here, this is part of a sort of campaign video that was rolled out the other day. And a lot of people pointed this out, that if when this thing rolled, I freeze framed the video at the 28-second mark, and you could see here it says the creation of a unified Reich, the creation of a unified Reich. Now, take that for what it's worth. Take that for what it's worth, okay? That that Trump rolled that out. But how different is that than a lot of the troll tweets that are coming out of LPNH and a lot of these MC affiliated either state parties or talking heads, right? Let me pull this over here. Let's see if we could bring this up and show it to you. Libertarian Party NH tweeted out, "The bad guys won the American Civil War. Over 9 million Southerners ended up enslaved to the American federal government. Today, over 100 million people in this region remain slaves." Now, I know what some of you are saying. They're like, oh, man, they're just being, they're being trolls. They're doing this. Guess what? You know what that behavior indicates to people? That you're a goddamn teenager. That you're a kid that's just looking to win a meme war. What is the political end goal of a statement like that? You don't have to be a political whiz to figure it out. That tweet is only preaching to the converted. You are not going to convince anybody else to become a libertarian by claiming that the American Civil War created more slaves. Now, you could sit down with someone, have a 3-hour conversation, smoke some weed, and maybe you could say, oh, wow, man, I never saw it that way. Maybe. But it's not going to happen in a stupid tweet. That's just trolling. You're trying to get a rise out of people, and then you're trying to get a hearty laugh and say, well, only the people who get it will need, oh, you know, if that offends you, you just didn't get it, man. You're not hip enough to get it. But guess what? Political messaging is, it has to be dumbed down for everybody to get. It can't be something snarky. It can't be something that only you and your dopey friends in a basement somewhere, all the incels in a basement get together and laugh over that tweet. That isn't what politics is about. You're not going to win. You're not going to get any converts that way. Bold messaging? Fair enough. I guess it's supposed to be definitional, right? What is bold? What's timid? What's acceptable? What isn't? I get it. You know, but at the same time, you have to understand that when you get this negative reaction to your tweets, don't double down. Don't come up with a tweet that's even more offensive. Like, if you're a stand-up comedian, that's the way you go. Not if you're a politician, not if you're a political party. Okay? What's all this bold messaging ever accomplished? Seriously, like, the only person in history that I could think of that has gotten away with nonsense messaging and has come out on top is Trump. Now, whether the Mises kids think they're going to replicate Trump, you know, I don't know. Maybe that is their plan. I mean, they certainly seem to be MAGA plants. I mean, there's been a bunch of us who have been, A, started out joking about this 2 years ago, but now it's kind of serious. Like, the whole thing, when you tie in Trump being invited from the get-go, McCardle saying Trump's not a bad guy, he wouldn't make for a bad president. When did the Libertarian Party become the Get Joe Biden Party? When did that happen? I don't understand. We're not the anti-Biden Party. We're the pro-liberty party. So why is it that we're focused exclusively on getting rid of Biden and replacing him with Trump? Who, by the way, if any of these people bothered to stop and think about it, it was Trump that exploded the debt. It was Trump that approved the jab, as many of you like to refer to it as. So all of a sudden, do we think Trump at 80 years old is going to change? Is that what we're thinking? So yeah, you're right. Like Jeff, I get it, Jeff. Inviting Trump to speak is not an endorsement of Trump. On its face, I agree with you, Jeff. But here's the problem. It's just not an invitation for Trump to come and speak. It's been this constant flirtation with the LP leadership right now that makes it seem that they're not interested in any of our candidates. McCardle goes on Austin Peterson's radio show. And she, it was literally like, well, you know, Trump's not a bad guy, but I guess I got to support the LP candidate. Who the hell running a political party gets on a show and says that? What is the upside to that other than to virtue signal to MAGA people? Hey, we're on your side. Wink, wink. I have to support the LP candidate. What the hell is that? You can't run a party like that. Jeff, I was hooked in by a bold message. Taxation is theft. Yes, taxation is theft. Yes, Jeff, you're absolutely right. See, now, and that's actually a great example of a message that I think, again, this is my opinion, that I think is bold, it's thought-provoking, but it's not trolling. Taxation is theft. Now you could have a discussion with someone when they're triggered by that statement, say a liberal's triggered by that statement, say taxation isn't theft. Taxation is the price we pay for a civilized society. Now conversation starts. Starting out a conversation by saying the North, when they fought the Civil War, created more slaves than were before, right? There's no good conclusion that comes from that. Honestly, I don't think there is. And even if there is, it would take too long to make that point, and you would burn so many bridges along the way. But you're right. Bold messaging for a bold philosophy, Jeff. Taxation is theft. Love that. That's a great example of bold messaging that should be reiterated. Barbara, how can the Libertarian Party better appeal to younger voters who are disillusioned with the two major parties? Barbara, that's a great question. In my opinion, the way you appeal to younger voters, and the reason I say this is because in my career, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of kids coming out of college, people who are, say, just 1, 2, 3 years into their career, and I've had the opportunity when they've joined my teams to sit and talk with them, you know, if we got a team lunch or something like that. And I'll just start asking questions, you know, like what, why is it fair? Or here's a good one, right? Do you think that women are discriminated against in the workplace? And typically someone of that age will say something like, of course they are. They make 28 cents less for every dollar that a man makes. And then you start asking them more questions. Maybe it's because I'm Greek, Barbara, but it's a Socratic method. I just get them to ask more questions and more questions and more questions. The next thing you know, a lot of them are like, yeah, that didn't make any sense. Women really aren't paid 28 cents less, right? Because you're taking an average of every job. You're not looking at everything else. You're not taking into account if it's purely related to gender, if it's related to life choices, if it's related to continuous work experience, if it's related to time taken off to have a children or to raise a family, right? So that, to me, is the way you hook young people. You hook them by having them ask questions. Lead them. You could be like Socrates or like Plato. Lead them to the right conclusion, but you don't tell them the conclusion. You kind of get them to ask questions, right? And to me, that's worked. And I think that works best, Barbara. But that's a great question. Really appreciated that question. Okay. Lisa, Trump. What about RFK Jr.? Lisa, you're right. Trump isn't the only guy that's going to be there that I disagree with. RFK is another one. RFK, the only reason libertarians have affinity with RFK is because he's anti-COVID vaccine and he's anti-vaccines in general. He's like a one-issue libertarian. What else about him is libertarian? He's generally a socialist. I've seen him advocate national service. I've seen him advocate gun control. I've seen him talk about tax redistribution. So literally the only thing that libertarians generally align with him on, and by the way, not all libertarians, some libertarians align with him on, is his anti-vaccine stances. And like I said, even if someone were inclined to agree with him on the COVID vaccines, he also pushes the discredited vaccines cause autism. Okay? And that is 100% bullshit. Like, vaccines do not cause autism. That's been thoroughly debunked, okay? So why is he invited there? Just for that one issue. Just for that one issue. And by the way, another theory of why he's at the convention? Because every vote for RFK, the Mises people feel, is a vote away from Biden. Which may be true. I haven't seen the polling on that, so I don't want to make assumptions that a vote for RFK is a vote taken away from Biden. I have an instinct that that might break like 60-40, 70-30, that a vote for RFK is a vote away from Biden. Certainly, I could tell you the Trump people feel that way. The Trump people feel that RFK would definitely, every vote for RFK is a vote away from Biden. Trump's campaign 100% believes that, which is why they're so willing to like, yeah, let's share the stage with RFK. Perfect. We're teaming up against Biden. Perfect. So you're right, Lisa, that is something that, you know, I don't yell enough about it because at the end of the day, I don't think RFK is anything more than a passing fad the way Ross Perot was. I'm hoping that that's the same about Trump, but Trump is obviously the more popular character right now for a lot of different reasons. So that's why I tend to focus on Trump. But you're right. You're absolutely right. RFK is also, by the way, Vivek Ramaswamy, he's also been invited. Now, he's an interesting one because he kind of poses like a libertarian, right? He's a rich guy. He's a successful businessman, made his bones in big pharma, which, by the way, the libertarians who love Vivek but hate big pharma, they tend to forget about that. Vivek is another one. He's a nationalist. If you're a libertarian, there is no way you can support a nationalist. The two are incompatible. It's like saying a libertarian socialist. Nationalism is a form of authoritarianism, plain and simple. So if someone comes out and says, I think we've got libertarian nationalism going on, no, what you've got is a word salad going on. That's about it. If you're a nationalist and you want to be a nationalist, God bless you, go be a nationalist, but that is incompatible with libertarianism. Jeff. Yeah, Jeff, you know, I really don't want to get into a vaccine debate right now. It has not been thoroughly debunked. The fact is CDC says V does not cause A, but there's not enough scientific data to prove the position. No, that's not the way you prove a position. Scientifically speaking, hypotheses are not proven. They are contradicted into being discarded. It's called the null hypothesis. You do not have to prove that V does not cause A. You have to prove that V causes A. You have to prove the vaccines cause autism. And that has not been proven by any stretch of the imagination. The one paper that most people, and I'm not saying Jeff, you necessarily, the paper that most people, which was from a British doctor, that somehow, quote, proved the vaccines cause autism, he later admitted to just having plagiarized the whole thing, not plagiarized, but just having made up a lot of the results. And then he recanted that admission because then he saw there was money in the grift, so et cetera, et cetera. But I really don't want to turn this into a vaccine debate at this point. But that's the way just in general hypotheses work, right? You don't prove a hypothesis as much as you always look for the null hypothesis. You look to contradict the hypothesis so you could get it out of the way. And if you have a hypothesis, you replace it only with a hypothesis that satisfies all the requirements of the previous hypothesis while adding more solid data and information to the ecosystem. So that's generally how hypotheses get disproven. Oh my goodness, I've been talking nonstop here for a while. Let me take a minute I'm revved up and ready to go. I'd love to keep this going. I just want to, you know what though? You know what time it is? It's time to pimp. Got to pimp my show. So I mentioned before that I've had the opportunity and the pleasure to interview long form a lot of the LP nominees for president. So I will say, when you get the chance, head on over the Big Questions with Big John. We bought that domain name. That's just those five letters. Hopefully it'll make it easier for everybody. BQWBJ.com. And check out some of our interviews with, like I said, many of just about all of the libertarian candidates. I think the only one I wasn't able to grab was Joshua Smith. But other than that, just about everybody else. If you go to Big Question with Big John, these are also on YouTube and Rumble. But basically, you could see we have a whole bunch of folks. You could see there's the interview with Dr. Belay. We also have Rex's interview. Also took a look with Jacob Hornberger, someone that I've also grown to admire a lot is Jacob Hornberger. Maybe not necessarily as a candidate, but as someone who's like just a bedrock of libertarian principle with philosophical integrity, in my opinion. I think Jacob does a great job of representing the libertarian. So you can see we've definitely had, you know, there's the interview with Lars and the interview with Chase. We also had the interview with Josh Rodriguez, who I believe has dropped out. And also there's Mike's interview. So, yeah, go to the Big Questions with Big John. Check out those interviews. Yeah. Hey, if it helps you decide on a candidate, my job is done, right? I'm happy. See if you know, and they're all long form, anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half each. So we really, you really get an opportunity to learn more about the candidates, hopefully in those interviews. So definitely, if you have the chance, check those out. Big Questions with Big John, sister podcast to this show. All right, let's get back to the comments as I look through these. Lisa, is the LP going to try to get Dave Smith to debate one of the non-LP candidates, and what do you think of that? Look, I have mixed feelings about Dave Smith. I don't doubt his sincerity. I don't doubt his knowledge of libertarianism. I think he's extremely well-read. I think he... I doubt there's many people that could go toe-to-toe with him on just libertarian doctrine, okay? So that's not anything that I question. I do think he has, at times, he reacts like a stand-up. part of being a politician is getting yelled at and shit on and constantly berated. And part of the demeanor of a politician should be to be able to take that in, process it, and then give you a reasoned response. Or just say, I refuse to answer that question. So that's part of what I think is going on with Dave Smith. I also think Dave Smith is very focused on certain issues. He's obviously very anti-war, and there's nothing wrong with being anti-war. I don't know if that anti-war zeal somehow clouds his judgment on mitigating issues or mitigating factors. Would they love Dave Smith to debate one of the non-LP candidates? Yes. I'm positive the Mises gang would love, and Dave identifies as a Mises guy, I'm sure the Mises Caucus would love to have Dave debate a non-LP candidate, but none of those guys are going to sit down with Dave Smith. There's no upside to it for them. What's there to gain for a Trump, an RFK? Why would that? What's in it for them to debate Dave Smith? I mean, listen. To those people who are talking about publicity and bringing eyes upon the Libertarian Party, Dave Smith, to a large extent, does that. I mean, in terms of getting on shows, like he goes on the Patrick Bet-David show, he goes on Joe Rogan. He has his own podcast where he's constantly talking about libertarian issues. And like I said, for the most part on these podcasts, he comes off very knowledgeable, very intelligent. So, see, I have no problem with Dave Smith, quote unquote, spreading the word. Zero. I just think it's inappropriate if you've got a slate of candidates that have been busting their asses for a campaign season. If you're going to invite these non-LP people, it should be our candidates that go toe-to-toe with them. Dave Smith, being a libertarian celebrity, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it or he would do poorly against them, but it's just not his place there to do that, in my opinion. Okay? Like, the convention is not an event where you just try to drive up your views on social media. The convention is for libertarians to select a libertarian nominee, someone who represents the party, and to go forth from there. Okay? It's not there to necessarily just get the best libertarian joke tellers and the best libertarian debaters and just throw out random challenges to people. Okay, that's not the situation. That's not what conventions are for. Set up Liberty Fest. Do whatever you want. Like, have Dave Smith ask to see if Dave Smith can take Skank Fest and change it into something to help the Libertarian Party. My guess is that while he'll work it into his routine, he'll say, like, look, Skank Fest isn't a political setting, right? Skank Fest is for people who want to come see Big J Okerson. They want to come see Louis J. Gomez. They want to see Dan Soder. They want to see all these comedians that are part of the Legion of Skanks, right? So you wouldn't expect Dave Smith to invite non-comedians to Skank Fest, right? So why do we expect the convention to host Republican candidates? Why do we expect the convention to host independent candidates who, by the way, are campaigning against our candidate? FYI, we don't even know who our candidate is. See, people think that, oh, wow, I'm against challenging Trump. I'm against debating Trump. No, none of that. It's just there's a time and a place, people, and the convention is not the place to promote, for lack of a better term, your enemies. So, Lisa, I hope that answered. Okay, what else? Jeff, I'm making a straw man against RFK. Yeah, listen, again, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but RFK... you know, for libertarians who say follow the money, big pharma sucks and all that sort of thing, they won't look at the trail of money that started flowing into RFK's law firm once he hopped on the vaccines cause autism train. Okay. So they can, you know, you can couch it any way you want that he's never come out and say, but he has, right? He has. And he uses temporal correlation, which is not a very strong argument. He uses uncited studies. The few cases where he tries to say, well, look, there was this case of XYZ, or if he's arguing against the MMR vaccine, you know, there'll be 20 people that come on. See, the problem is that, and here's my core theory. So, Jeff, now you've got me off on a tangent, but hopefully you guys will sit through it for this very quickly. Here's the issue. Generally speaking, you've got vaccine, let's call them vaccine deniers, just as a group term. Don't take offense at that. You've got vaccine deniers who are very good at talking, very good at constructing conspiracies that are self-supporting and self-consistent. And you're going up against introverted nerds. Okay. And I'm not saying that as an insult. To be a good microbiologist, to be a good virologist, to be a good immunologist, right? You're someone who doesn't deal with people, who doesn't deal in debates, who deals in staring into a microscope, staring at a petri dish, right, and running statistical analysis. Those people are not the life of the party. So you put them up against, honestly, anybody who likes to talk crap, and that scientist will look ridiculous by the end of the conversation. Okay? That's part of the problem, by the way. And that's entirely on the scientific community. They don't know how to properly communicate. And I'm half a scientist myself, and I'll tell you, that is one of the major problems. A lot of my colleagues, when I was still more heavily into the science industry, that is one of the biggest problems they have. They can talk to each other because they're all nerds. They try to explain their positions. Part of it is an arrogance. I'll be the first to admit, part of it is an arrogance. I can't explain to you in an hour what took me 15 years to learn. So I'm not going to even try to do it. Either believe me or don't. Take my credentials at their face value, right? A lot of scientists, a lot of doctors will do that. That's a problem with them. I'll be the first to admit that. But yeah, that's the issue there. So, again, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get off on that little bit of a tangent, Jeff. And Jeff, don't think I'm mad at you, Jeff. I don't know you, but I love you already, Jeff. Anybody who comes to my show is someone that I love. Final question from Lisa. It doesn't have to be your final question, Lisa. I hope I'm not driving you. Who do you think wins the LP nomination? I love you, John. Oh, that's a great question. That is a great question. I don't know. The Mises Caucus, from internal communications that I've seen, is pushing hard. They are pushing hard for Recktenwald. Okay. The LP candidate coming out of this is, if the MC had its way, and it might get their way, it might get its way rather, is Recktenwald. McArdle sent out their points of order, how to squash anti-MC delegates, how to challenge credentials of non-MC delegates. There's been lawsuits. There's one just got settled in Michigan. They're trying to decredential. Is that the right word? Decredential candidates from non-Mises states, non-Mises delegations. So now my partner here, William, has said to me on numerous occasions, John, what you're seeing in the Libertarian Party now is old hat in the Republican and Democrat parties, that they do this all the time. That might be the case. And maybe I was being Pollyannish by saying, hey, we libertarians are somehow above that fray. But it is a little disappointing. So I know for a fact that Mises is trying very hard for Recktenwald to come out as the nominee, and trying very hard for Clint Russell to be the VP. I don't know. I don't have my finger on the pulse of the delegates themselves. It's tough for me to say. So I'm not going to pretend here, sit here and tell you what I need to, who's going to come out. Like I said, I hope it's one of the three that I mentioned. I hope it's Lars, Chase, or Mike Termott. I think any one of those three will do. And it's almost like they're working as a block against the Mises caucus. By the way, none of them will tell you that. None of them. And I've asked them, I've tried to get it out of them. And they're all team players at this point. I give them credit. Not one of them has come out publicly, at least, and said anything to suggest rigging or anything like that. I'm saying that. And there's a lot of other people who are saying that too. So take that for what it's worth. Okay, let's see. Is there anybody that I've missed? If I've missed you in the comment section, I'm sorry. Swampcast, come sit on the stupid podcast like swamp creatures. We'll have a few drinks and talk LP stuff. Winky emoji. Swampcast, yes. Go do me a favor. Let's talk. Send me a DM on my Twitter feed. You can find me, BigJohn_SXM. You could check me out there, or you could go to Grumblings Media. Either way, send a DM and we'll talk. Absolutely. All right. So that's what I've had to say so far. I had some other things I wanted to mention, as it were. I'm going to check the one more time. Hopefully they've updated their site to see those final tallies for the debate stage. And it looks like they still have not updated the site. Let me go. I'm sorry, while I look away, I apologize. Oh, view results. Okay, so they moved, they changed this. Okay, so officially, let's see. Let me share my screen. So officially, presidential straw poll winners. Charles Belay came in, it looks like, at number one. He raised almost $39,000. Charles Belay won the straw poll on the debate stage. Lars was second at $33,000. Chase was fifth at $31,500. Josh Smith at $30,000. And Mike Rechtenwald at $25,000. So remember what I said at the start of the show. With 1 minute left, Josh was not in the top five. Termot was in that spot. And I guess he had some last minute fundraising that came in, and he got the spot there, the number four spot. Rechtenwald came in fifth. So those are the five on the debate stage, and the rest of the candidates, which would be Mike Termod, Dr. Jody Jones, Toad, and Joe Collins, they got aced off the debate stage. Termot raised $23,000, it looks like, and he just got beat out by Mike Rechtenwald there. So it's a good thing I checked, because now the information has changed. It's Belay, Babstead, Oliver, Smith, and Rechtenwald on the debate stage. So a little bit of new information there. Termot off the stage, Joshua Smith in. Which was interesting, because he kept saying he would make the debate stage. And it was interesting that I know he was doing a lot of he was doing a big push these last couple of days on social media, urging his supporters to donate to get on that stage. Now, again, that's just these results are for the debate stage. They really don't reflect the delegate the delegates' opinions. It's not a delegate straw poll. It's a donor's straw poll. So interesting there. Let me see. What else have we got going here? Okay, that looks like it's about it from the comments. Thank you, everyone, who went into our and left a question or a comment. Really appreciate all the opinions here. I love to talk to you folks. One last question. Let's see. From Barbara, looking ahead, what do you envision as the future of libertarianism, both in terms of ideology and practical implementation? Barbara, with some good questions tonight. All right, so I'm going to end it on this question. Libertarian, so it's weird, right? I've talked about this with several of the candidates and a lot of times on this very podcast as well. The thing is to be able to say, most Americans, if you ask them about issues individually, most Americans align with libertarian principles, right? They believe in lower taxes. They believe in the government being kept out of their bedrooms. They believe in generally freedom and freedom of speech generally, to the extent that when you add it all up, I think the largest identifiable philosophical block among Americans is libertarian philosophy when you go by issues, right? So I think that number, it was a poll from a year or two ago, that number comes out at about 27%, 28% of the population. And that seems to be the largest of the identifiable philosophical blocks, right? But for many reasons, politically, that doesn't translate. Politically, people still vote their interests, and they become austere with everybody else, and they become very generous with themselves. So typically that means like, yeah, my county, my city, my state deserves to get federal dollars, deserves to get state attention. But, you know, those kooks in that neighboring state, man, they're just leeches. We shouldn't give them anything, right? That seems to be the general way people approach politics in this country. So you're always going to have that sort of disconnect. We also have a political system, to steal from Lars, which is rigged against third parties. There is, each state is left to its own devices to work against third parties or to work for them. It just so happens that they work against them in the overwhelming majority of the time. My home state here in New York, it is tougher to get on the ballot in New York State than it is to get on the ballot against Putin in Russia. That is not an exaggeration, okay? So when you're dealing with that, like I said, ask Larry Sharp, how many times has he gotten ballot access only to have the state legislature take it away from him, only to have the courts take it away from him because he'll get sued by the other parties, right? So you have those barriers to libertarianism politically. By the way, it's a problem that's also shared by the Green Party, by the Socialist Party, by the Communist Party, by any third party, like the new Liberal Party that's supposedly going to take the place of the Libertarian Party. Some disaffected libertarians starting their own classical liberal party. You're going to have the same problem, which is like the system is now built against third parties. So unless there's some sort of federal standard, and I know what you're saying, as a libertarian, why would you look to government for a solution? Because it's government that is putting up barriers. So unless you overthrow the government, you may have to use governmental levers to get rid of the impediments that government itself has put up, right? So, and listen, we also have to be consistent, right? So libertarians will say, like, we deserve to be on the ticket, right? But at the same time, when a state makes a movement to exclude Donald Trump from the ballot, libertarians join a lawsuit to get him back on the ballot. And my question is, why is the Libertarian Party concerned about getting Trump on the ballot again in Colorado? Have you sued to get your ballot access everywhere? Worry about that first. So anyway, so the point being that, Barbara, long-winded answer to your question, I think people may actually become more enamored of libertarianism. Certainly we were on the upswing with the Gary Johnson campaigns. A lot of libertarians, see, okay, now, Barbara, you've got me talking now. Here's the thing. A lot of libertarians came into the party, like I did, with people like Milton Friedman, with Hayek, with Ayn Rand to some extent. Then there was the next generation that got into libertarianism basically through Ron Paul. And those are two different forms of libertarianism. I think still compatible with each other, but they're slightly different versions of libertarianism. And then you had another generation. See, the Ron Paul people won't admit to this because the person I'm about to mention, they really don't care for. If you're a Ron Paul acolyte, Gary Johnson is not somebody high on your list. But when you talk to a lot of later libertarians, they'll tell you their entree into libertarianism was because of Gary Johnson. That when Gary Johnson ran as a libertarian candidate for president, he opened them up to libertarian ideas. And he had credibility because he was a former Republican governor, right? So in their minds, he's not like the old libertarians you saw at our conventions, like naked guys going up to the podium, you know, people, guys with boots on their heads, so on and so forth, right? So people forget, to the average American, that was the image of the Libertarian Party. People who got on stage wearing boots on their head. Now, I get what Vermin Supreme was trying to do. And from, I've never met him, but everyone I've spoken to says he's a great guy. He's a great performance artist. But the average American saw that as nonsense. Gary Johnson comes along. A lot of people are now libertarian because of Gary Johnson. Ron Paul people hate that sort of concept. They'll tell you those guys are not real libertarians. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of these later libertarians came from Gary Johnson. So as you go forward, libertarianism is always going to find a different latch politically, right? I'm just hoping that the current leadership isn't going to drive people away with their association with Christian white nationalists. There is no situation, I'll end it on this, there's no situation where any libertarian should be in any way tolerating a Nick Fuentes. Period. You can defend his right to free speech without endorsing any of the nonsense that flies out of his pie hole. Just the way you could say, I defend the right of those Nazis to march in Skokie when they marched in Skokie, but they are the lowest form of humans on the planet. You could say both at the same time and remain principled. So as long as the Libertarian Party does not become associated with that nonsense, which right now it kind of sort of is. It kind of sort of is right now. As long as we stay away from that, I think we'll do just fine. We'll bounce back. But there's always the possibility that we won't be able to. Okay, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this live stream episode of Free For All. I want to thank everyone who jumped into the comment section. Even if I disagreed with you, I appreciate all of you coming to share your thoughts, comments, and feedback. Please continue to do so. You can catch back episodes of this show. Go to freeforallshow.com, freeforallshow.com. That's just a URL that'll point you back to grumblingsmedia.com, but it takes you to the Free For All homepage. So type that in. And if you want to find out more about my other show, The Big Questions with Big John, I don't live stream that because I prefer doing that one-on-one with my interview subject. So check us out, The Big Questions with Big John. At bqwbj.com. Again, that takes you to the grumblingsmedia.com site, and it just drops you on the Big Questions homepage. Until next time, everyone, thank you for joining us. And until then, peace, everyone.